Hi folks, Joe Stagner from Microsoft here, and welcome to this video series on data access technologies for ASP.NET developers. Historically, as ASP.NET developers, we've used ADO.NET and its predecessor, ADO, to access the databases that drive our web applications. And over the years, ADO.NET has served us quite well. But in recent years, Microsoft has innovated and created some new data access technologies that facilitate the developer experience as well as provide facilitation for the more advanced architectural considerations that are necessary when building the data access layer for our web applications. So in this very first video, we're going to take a look at a couple of the ways that we would use ADO.NET, both from a controls perspective as well as at the code level, and then we're going to do our first link example. It's a very basic code level example of using link to access the database, and hopefully the comparison of those two will begin to show you some of the advantages of using link. Then, as this video series progresses, we'll look at lots of the details of link and the entity framework and see how the technologies will both facilitate developer productivity, quality of design, and quality of architecture in our ASP.NET web applications. So let's go ahead and get started. Of course, if we're going to build a database-backed application, the first thing we'll need is a database to program against. So I've fired up SQL Server Management Studio, and we're going to take a quick look at the local SQL Express instance that I have installed on my developer machine. Let's expand the databases collection, and we'll find one that I've created called managed underscore poll. And if we look at the tables collection, you'll see there's a questions table, an answer table, and a comment table. So this set of data structures is simply meant to support a web-based poll application where you would ask the visitors to your website a question and they would select from a multiple choice answer. And in this case, the tables collection also supports a freeform comment. So that's what we're going to program against for our ADO.NET and our link samples that we're going to do in this video. So let's get started building an application by firing up Visual Web Developer Express and saying create a new website. Now, you remember, there's going to be three parts to this demo. The first two are ADO.NET related, and then the last is link related. And the ADO.NET related ones, we're going to take sort of opposite ends of the spectrum for programming using ADO.NET. In the first of that two pieces, we're going to look at using data access controls to access the database through ADO.NET. So to do that, I'm going to scroll down in my Visual Studio Toolbox, find the data collection, and grab a grid view control and drop it onto my page. If I switch over to design mode, I can go ahead and auto-format this to something that's a little bit more aesthetically appropriate. And then here, I can say, let's choose a data source. And of course, since there are none in this application yet, we're going to go ahead and generate one. We're going to connect to a database, and we're going to need to specify the connection criteria. So the first thing I'm going to do is click on the drop-down under server name. And what's going to happen here is the wizard will search my network and find all of the SQL Server instances that I have access to from inside my IDE. Now, you can see some of these are on different machines. Some of them are on my dev machine here. And we're going to select the SQL Express instance that is installed on my development machine. And then I'm going to go down. We're going to use Windows, just plain Windows authentication. And then we're going to go down to the select or enter a database name. If we drop down, we can find the managed poll database that we were just looking at. Let's go ahead and test that connection. Things work, so we'll say OK. We'll go ahead and use that connection. And we'll save the connection in the web.config file as a connection string. And then here at this part of the wizard, this is where we're actually the wizard is going to generate the SQL syntax that will be used to pull data out of the database. So we're going to choose the table or tables that we want to access. In our case, it's just going to be the questions table. I'm going to go ahead and say select star, although obviously this is just for demonstration purposes. So in lots of applications, you don't want to select columns that you're not going to use, especially if there are lots of columns and lots of records in your database. But for the purposes of this demo, select star is just fine. Go ahead and click next. Let's test the query. And you can see here that there are two questions that already exist in the questions database. So we see them here in our test query results. We can go ahead and click finish here, and that's it. We haven't written a single line of code, and I can go ahead and run this application, and voila, we'll see our view here with the two questions that we looked at when we evaluated these both in SQL Management Studio, as well as in the wizard that created the database connection. And that was very easy, simple, not a single line of code, and if that works for you, that's great. But there's a price for that simplicity. So let's dig under the covers a little bit. Let's look at the code behind for default.aspx, and you'll see there's no code behind generated other than the project's default page load event. So there is no data access code that's here, and what that means is that while it was very easy to create that database connection and pull the data into our grid, we don't have programmatic access to this data on the way into our application while it lives inside our application and is manipulated by the user, or on its way back out of the application. If we switch back to the default.aspx page and we go to source view, what you'll see here is this is our data source control, and it's represented here in markup. So you can see here is the connection string. Right? So this is where the connection string gets pulled out of the database. And then last, we can see this select statement, and this is one that was generated for us. Now this is declarative, right? So question is the table we're pulling from. Select star from the questions table. Now, as I said, if this works for you, that's great. But particularly in more advanced applications, or even as we mature as web developers, we want programmatic access to our database in our code behind. And maybe it's because we want the control. Maybe it's because we want to manipulate the data. Maybe it's because we need to create an n-tiered scenario where we have a data access layer that apart from the other portions of our web application. Or maybe it's because we're doing complex data access programming and the debugging experience of this declarative model isn't as good as the debugging experience that we get when we're actually debugging source code and code behind. So, that's the first of the two ADO.NET demos. The second one is going to be where we actually go in and write some code, all in code behind, to use ADO.NET to access our database. So let's go ahead and do that now. So the first thing that we'll need here is a field to contain the data that we're going to retrieve in our code behind. So let's go ahead and drop a label there. And we're just going to use this label as a container for the results of our query, and let's get rid of the text label 1. And now let's go into code behind. So we're going to programmatically access our database through ADO.NET, and to do that we're going to need the system.data.sql client namespace. So let's say using system.data.sql client. And I'm just going to write the code here in the page load event handler. In your application, you might or might not choose to put it in the page load event handler, depending on what you're actually doing. But it'll suffice to place it here for the purposes of our demo. So the first thing we're going to need is a connection string. Let's make a connection string. We'll call it connection string. And here we're going to say data source equal, and here we're going to need the machine name. Now I could hand type the machine name, but if you can't remember or you want to save a little time or what have you, just go ahead and reopen up SQL Management Studio, and you can cut and paste it right out of the selection box there. Now make sure after you specify the name of the machine that you use a semicolon, and you're also going to want to escape that slash. Here we're going to say the initial catalog is managed poll, which is the name of the database that we were looking at in our SQL Express instance. And then we're also going to want to specify the security that we're using. So we'll say integrated security equal true. Okay, next we're going to need our query string, our actual SQL. And you'll note that this squiggly here is just telling us that this is assigned a value, but it's never used. And we're going to use it later. So let's create another string. Let's call this query string. This is going to be our select statement. So this will say select star from And question is the name of the table we're selecting from. So we're going to say select star from DBO question. And that's going to resolve to the database that we want to work with. And now we're ready to start actually creating the objects to interact with the database. So let's do that in the using clause. So let's say using SQL connection. And we'll just call it connection. Equals new SQL connection. And we're going to pass in the connection string that we specified earlier on. And here inside our using statement, now we can create the SQL command that will be used to execute the select statement that we just specified in the query string. So let's say SQL command, and we'll just call this command equals new SQL command. And here we're going to pass in the query string that we created here, as well as the connection object that we created here. And now we have a command object. Now we're ready to try and use these objects to actually interact with the database. We only need one of these, of course. All right. So now let's create a try block in case we have any problems. And because we have a try block, we'll need a catch block. And this catch block is going to be where we end up if accessing our database is problematic. So while we're in the catch block, let's go ahead and grab the exception if we get here, something went wrong, and we can program against the exception. And in fact, remember we created that label 1. If we actually have a problem, let's go ahead and populate label 1 with the message from the exception. Right, so just in case we have any problems. Now, here in the try block is where we'll actually try and go against the database. So the first thing we need to do, of course, is to open the database. So let's go ahead and do that. Let's say connection.open. And again, if that fails, an exception will get thrown and we'll end up in our catch block. Once we've opened our connection, now we can actually try and read out of the database. So let's say SQL reader. Equal command dot execute reader. Right? So we'll call the execute reader method of the command object that we created, which will return a SQL data reader. And now we can iterate through the collection of rows that are in the database. So we can say, well, reader dot read. And all we're going to do in the reader is we're going to populate the contents of the label control that we placed on our page earlier with the fields from the row that we returned from our SQL table. So to do that, let's say label1.text equal label1.text. So what we're going to do is just we're going to append to whatever is already exists in the label control. And let's add. And here we're going to say reader sub 0, so we're going to get the first element in the returned collection. And now let's just do a little formatting. So let's say put a space in between each field, right? And then we're going to append, and I'm going to do this 5 times. And then when we're done, let's put in a break so we'll get a line feed in our label control, and we need to change these offset, these array offsets, so we can get each of the six fields in the table. And of course, if we make a mistake here, we'll get an array error at runtime. Oop, I did one too many, so let's fix those. 0 through 1, 2, 3, 4, and let's add just one more. Okay, so we've taken six columns out of the table, and we've popped those into the label control on our page. And the last thing that we want to do here is we want to make sure we clean up after ourselves by closing our reader object. So we want to make sure that we clean up after ourselves from a resource perspective. Now, let's go ahead and run this. And if we haven't made any mistakes, what we'll see here is these two questions in our database, right? So again, we've just appended them all, so we haven't done the nice formatting that we got in our grid. Of course, we're accessing these programmatically, but we could create an HTML table manually in our code, or if we wanted to, we could go ahead and create a local object and then bind that object to the data grid. So there is more work to do there, but we have more control because we're doing all of our data accessing code behind, and that means that we can manipulate the data both on its way into our application and on its way out of our application, as well as the user interacts with the page. Now, let's go back and look at sort of a couple of the shortcomings that exist here in this way of accessing the database through ADO.NET that will be solved for us when we get to coding with Link. So the primary thing here is, first of all, notice that this query string is just text, right? So if we say select blah from, let's go ahead and run this now. Notice no error, no compiler error, no red squiggly mark. We can go ahead and run this because, and of course, notice here, this is the product of our catch block where we took the exception and displayed it. So what's actually happening here is that although this code compiles just fine, we get a runtime exception. And the reason that we get a runtime exception is that to Visual Studio and to .NET, this query string, this select statement, is just a string. It's just text. So it doesn't become code until it gets to SQL Server and is parsed for execution. So things could be better in that department. The second thing is that if we look down here, we've got this reader, right? This reader is not a typed object. It's just a collection for us. So it's great that we have access to it, but again, as we work with strongly typed data and we recognize the value of building our applications based on strongly typed data, both from a developer productivity perspective, but especially from a application evolutionary perspective, the idea of using strongly typed data means it's much easier for developers to understand what they wrote or what somebody else wrote some time ago. So that's not the perfect experience for the developer as well. So while this technology works and we've used it successfully to build great applications over the years, Link is going to improve on these things. So in the next portion of this particular demo, this first video, what we're going to show you is a very basic mechanism for accessing your database from your code behind using Link, and hopefully some of the advantages of Link will be obvious to you when we get to writing that code. So let's go ahead and do that now. Okay, so now to do the Link version, let's go ahead and fire up Visual Web Developer Express again, create a new website. And the first thing that I want to do is create a reference to the link.data, to the system.data.link namespace. So I'm going to add a reference, scroll down, find system.data.link, go ahead and include that. Now that I've done that, I can hop into code behind and I can add a couple of namespaces that we're going to be using to code simply using links. So I'm going to say using system.data.link. And then I'm going to, add link.mapping, and you'll see the pure genius of mapping momentarily. Now, next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to create a class. Now, hopefully, at this stage of the game, we're all working with classes. I happen to be coding in C# today, but you can do the same thing in VB, so there's really nothing different. And here, I'm going to create a class for the question that we were working with in the previous example. So we're still going to be going against the same data, same tables, and we're going to be interested in those questions for our web polling application. So here I'm going to say public class question. And I'm going to do something special with this class after I fix my spelling error. And what I'm going to say here is I'm going to add an attribute called table. Now this is link, folks. I'm adding the attribute table, and I'm specifying that the name of the table in the database that we'll be working with is question. And close the attribute. Now, so what I've just done is I've used this link technology to associate this public class called question to a table in an as yet undefined database named question. Next, I need to define some of the properties that will be contained by this class. So, rather than work with all of the properties, we're just going to work with the question's ID and the question text, the actual text that that is the question. Now, I'm going to do this coding by hand, but if this sort of starts to freak you out, don't worry. It's nowhere near this complex because the tools will do all this for you. I just want to start at the lowest common denominator so that you can see what's actually taking place under the covers and start to develop a little understanding of the coolness of link. So let's define a couple of properties. Let's make the private representation for our ID property, and then we'll make the public version. So let's say public int ID, and then let's create the setters and getters for our property. So let's say get and set, and here we have to implement get and set. So let's say return this dot ID. Remember, we're returning the private version, so hopefully you have enough familiarity with objects to understand how these accessors work. And the next thing I want to do is I want to allow it to be set if the value being set is actually a value. So let's say if this underscore ID value, this ID equal to value. Okay, so this is just basic class stuff. Right. So we have this for our ID property. Now let's do the same thing for our question text property. All right, so first, these are going to be strings. And next, it's not going to be ID. It's going to be question text. Now remember, this is the name of the field in the table that contains the question. So let's just fix up our class with using the magic of cut and paste to fully define our question property. Now, let's do a little bit more link magic here. So, you'll recall that we used the table attribute to specify that this class was going to relate to the table named question in an as yet unidentified database. Well, down here in these properties, we're going to do the same thing. So we're going to say, we're going to add an attribute that says column, and we're going to specify the storage relationship for this column. So basically what we're going to be doing is we're going to be relating a column in the question table to this property in our class. So to do this, now I'm going to show you a little syntax here. This syntax might freak you out a little bit if you're thinking, oh, I have to learn all of these properties and values. You don't. There's a way for the tool to do it for you. And in the next video, video number 2 in this series, I'm going to show you how to get Visual Studio or Visual Web Developer to generate all this stuff for you. But I just think that more and more developers want to know what goes on under the covers, so we're going to write this example manually. So here we're going to say storage equal, and the storage element that this is going to equate to will be the ID. Now, some more information that we need to provide. First, let's say autosync equal autosync.always. And again, I understand you might not know what these mean. Don't worry about it. We'll get to all of these in the subsequent videos. I'm just providing some initial information that's going to be necessary for us to run the demo. But what we're really interested in is the coding experience that we're going to get to in a minute. So here we'll say DB type, and the type is int, not null, identity column. Now, if those things sound familiar to you, it's because those are properties of the type specifier inside our SQL column. So if you look at all of these things, it's an extension of information that we're already working with. We're just doing it here in our link syntax. Okay, so int, not null, identity, and one last specifier we'll say is DB generated, and we're going to set that equal to true. And now we can close up our attribute. Now, having done that, let's go ahead and grab that entire attribute and cut and paste down here into our question text. Now, there's some stuff here that we don't need, so let's go back and say storage ID is going to be question text. And we don't need autosync, so let's just get rid of that. DB type equal text. Right, so this is defined as a column of type text in our SQL database, and it is not an identity column. So let's get rid of that. And we don't need is DB generated because the default is false. Let's set also can be null equal false, because the question's text obviously can't be false. And then lastly, let's not worry about checking for updates at this state of our learning experience with link. So let's say update check never. Okay, so what we've done so far is we've created a public class called question, and we've used the link syntax to decorate it with an attribute to say, hey, this question class is going to get mapped to a table named question. Inside the class, we've defined our properties. In our case, two properties. One is ID and the other is question text. For each of these, we've specified that these properties in our class will map to a column in the database table. So in our case, we've specified that the property question text will map to a column question text in our table. Now we can go down into our page load event, and again, I'm just using page load for the sake of simplicity, but here in our page load event, we can now start to code against our database using link. So one quick thing let's go do. Let's go so you don't have to watch me type. Go ahead and grab the machine name. And then back in Visual Web Developer, we can start coding against that database. So to begin with, let's create a data context. So we're going to say data context. Let's just call it DB for database equal new data context. And here is basically going to be our connection string. So in fact, let's go steal a connection string out of our original project, which will be stored in the web.config file. So I'm a big favor of cut and paste. So let's go ahead and grab that. And then go back, and here we can, inside our data context, use that string. And the only thing we need to do is escape that slash character. All right, so this is the same as the connection string that we used in the previous example. We're connecting to our local machine SQL Express instance. Our catalog is going to be managed poll, and we're going to use integrated security. All right, so now that we have a context, let's go ahead and create a typed table against which we can run queries. And as you're watching this, look at the syntax, the IDE support. This is where programming in Link starts to get really exciting. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to say we're going to work with a table. And we're going to use a language feature called generics to specify that the table is going to be of type question. Now notice question got suggested to us in IntelliSense. So what's happening here is that Link, in combination with what we've already defined here in our project so far, is maximizing the suggestions that it can give to us to help us code as quickly and as accurately as possible. So here, let's create this table. We'll call it questions. And then we're going to say our table equal db dot get table, and the table that we want to get is the question table. Right, so what we just said here is we're creating an instance of an object that is going to be a table of type question, and we're populating it by calling the get table for question method. Now, if this syntax is a little bit kludgy to you, this is generics, and it's a feature that was added in the 3.0 versions of the languages in C# and .NET. You can study generics. There's a couple of books out that are available for them, or you can just follow this format, and it'll just work for you, and you can dig under the covers to deeply understand generics later. But basically, this gives us a table of typed questions from our database that we specified here. Now, remember, this type happens here. Right. So next, let's go ahead and create a queryable collection of items from this table. So now we can say iQueryable, and we want questions. So we'll use the type question. iQueryable, and we'll give it an instant name. I'm just going to call this qquery equal. And here's the interesting part. We're going to write syntax here. This is query syntax. And it's not the same as SQL, but it should look familiar to you if you've done any amount of SQL programming. So here we're going to say from q in questions select q. Then here, we can iterate through that queryable collection by saying for each. And we'll specify what we're going to iterate through. So we'll say for each question, q in qquery. Right, so you're familiar with the for each statement. So we've created this iQueryable collection, and we're saying for each question, and the variable name is q, in qquery, do some stuff, which we'll do down here. Now, this is where we, in the previous example, we just pushed stuff into a label field. In our case, we're just going to go response.write. And here, this is going to be another slick piece for us. Here, we're going to be able to say q. Now, q is what? Q is the question that we're currently at in our for each loop from the collection that was returned from querying the database. So q is the current item. When I hit the period, notice here that I get full IntelliSense. This is typed based on the class definition that I mapped to the columns in the table that we specified. So notice here we have ID and question text. So in this case, let's output the ID, and then we'll add a space, and then we'll go q again, and in this case we'll output the question text, and then we'll append a couple of break characters. But notice how really slick the IntelliSense is there, that by virtue of creating this class and mapping the class to the table and then creating these properties and mapping the properties to columns in the table, we now have created this collection that's returned from the query that is typed based on our class definition, and we have full IntelliSense support. Next, let's go ahead and run, and if I haven't made any mistakes, what we see here is the two questions output from our link query. But we have a very object-oriented, well-structured access mechanism for strongly typed representation of our data with full IntelliSense support. And I think that that's really cool. Now, again, I want to reiterate, if you looked at me writing this class code and these attributes and sort of freaked out a little bit, please don't worry about that, because in the next video, I'm going to show you how Visual Studio will do all of that work for you. But hopefully, this gives you just a hint into some of the power and the improved developer experience when coding with link instead of just passing SQL syntax to an ADO.NET object. ¶¶